and welcome to Como Explained. It's the new podcast from the KBIA newsroom that takes some of the thorny issues and politics that affect our community and breaks them down for you. I'm Scott Pham. I'm the digital content director here at KBIA. My co-host is Ryan Fumuliner, assistant director of the newsroom.
Hi. Yeah, and so this week on Intersection, which is the weekly show that I host, we talked about immigration reform, the proposal for that on the federal level, and we wanted to talk about what it meant here in Missouri as well. Obviously, we talked a lot about what's there, but we really wanted to get the idea of what's going on here in the state with immigration.
And yeah, it's kind of a funny topic for the show because a lot of people don't think of immigration as like a local issue or, you know, much less a local issue to a place like Columbia. But immigration does happen in Missouri, and it does happen in Columbia, and it affects our economy and our society. So we're going to talk about it.
Yes, sounds great. So let's just dive right in, I guess, first off. I mean, as you mentioned, it really affects, obviously, as you know, communities all over the country. But here in Columbia, it is somewhat unique. I guess to start off in Missouri, the numbers on this are really tough, especially when you're talking about undocumented, unauthorized, is what the Pew Hispanic Research Center that I'm going to be referring to, I'll be talking about here in a minute. Like, that's what the word they use, unauthorized, undocumented.
Because if you say undocumented, it's kind of like, it kind of implies those are the people that don't show up in numbers.
Right, so. Right. So how are you going to have a number for it? But right. They try anyway. So it's something like 55,000 undocumented immigrants in the state, okay? And so obviously, you know, with only so many metro areas, although a lot of them are in rural areas as well, right, these undocumented immigrants. So we got a rundown. Domingo Martinez Castilla is with the Cambio Center, which does try to do some research in this field, and he gave us a good little breakdown of where some of where undocumented immigrants are in Missouri, and especially because a lot of the reform has to do with what jobs these people are going to be working in, right? We'll talk more about that later, but there's a decent little breakdown he gave me. I wanted to throw out there that basically the rural areas are where we see a lot of this population. And like meatpacking plants, there are some in the north and southwest of Missouri. Construction, you said, is also kind of a growing industry for immigrant workers. Sedalia, Jeff City, California, Kirksville even. So a lot of places in our listening area. And then, of course, like in Branson, there's a lot of hospitality work.
Mm-hmm. Mid-Missouri is kind of a growing community anyway, so construction is bigger here than other parts of the state.
Right. So there's some construction work, especially seasonal stuff around here. One thing that was kind of interesting, though, about Columbia was they were talking about the fact that we have so many students that might actually kind of offset that need for hospitality workers.
Right. Yeah. And in a lot of communities, you're going to find immigrants, especially undocumented immigrants, working in hospitality industries. But because there is no source of cheap labor or young people to do those jobs.
And now you've got all these students here that need a paycheck, or their mom says they need a paycheck while they're in school, whatever. And so they're okay with taking $8 an hour or whatever it's going to be to, you know, be working at the grocery store or whatever. So we've got so there, that is not necessarily one of the huge populations we see in Columbia, people working in hospitality. But there are a few other interesting – Columbia is kind of unique in a lot of ways. But when it comes to immigration, it also is, because not just what I've been talking about so far is a lot of undocumented immigrants, but there's also these other types of people that are here from other countries, right? You've got refugees, and there's actually a pretty big population, relatively big population of refugees, especially from African countries in Colombia, which is something that I think a lot of people in the community know about, but there's I think a lot of people probably wouldn't know about that. And, you know, we'll talk more, but there's some measures in this proposal, and it's something people think about. Refugees kind of have a different feel, I guess, which is something that Domingo, we didn't even get to it on the show, but in our pre-interviews with Domingo, he talked a lot about this, and some of the other guests on Intersection talked about how the way that refugees are treated as immigrants is so much different than someone who's undocumented, especially somebody from Mexico or Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of basically, I think, with one of their ideas, because a lot of people that we had on the show, you know, work with people in immigration and immigration lawyers. So they're saying if one of their goals was if everybody treated immigrants to the country like they treat refugees, it'd be much easier to be an immigrant in the country, basically.
Now that's really interesting. That's a good point. Yeah. One kind of odd thing about Missouri is that the kind of breakdown of our immigrant population is actually pretty diverse. You'd think it would lean very heavily Latin American like it does in most of the country. In most of the U.S., I think we're looking at about in most of the U.S., as of 2011, we're looking at 52% of all immigrants from Latin America, 29% from Asian countries. So that's the vast majority of the immigration population just from two parts of the world. In Missouri, we've got 31% from Latin America, 36% from Asia. So actually a little bit higher from that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting in Colombia, too, because there's an obvious answer for that. I mean, where are we sitting right now? We're at the university.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a big part of this town, right? And so there's a lot of people here on visas for work as students. And that's something that also they're targeting in this new provision as well.
Yeah, and we haven't said explicitly yet, but earlier this month, there was some proposed legislation from a group of eight senators that would promise to vastly overhaul the immigration system as we have it now. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later in the show, but we kind of want to give you an idea of what immigration looks like in this state.
Yeah, and so you kind of already talked about it. I mean, there's been some research, really interesting research out of Kansas City. With some universities, UMKC and K-State in Kansas, some researchers there compared Kansas and Missouri and found that Missouri, as you were talking about, it was much more diverse, not as much as large of a chunk from
any one place.
Yeah, from any one place. But in Kansas, of course, it was mostly Hispanic. I want to say I don't have the trying to find the numbers in front of me, but it was something like, let's see. Well, in Kansas, immigration is directly responsible for 7 to 8% of the economy. It's lower than that. It's only about 4% of the economy in Missouri.
Right. These numbers are not directly related,
sure.
But we also have a smaller percentage of our population made up by immigrants. We've got about 4% of Missouri population made up by immigrants. Compare that to the U.S. as of 2011. That's in the state, in the country as a whole, we're looking at 13%.
Right. So, yeah, and so it is. You kind of opened the show talking about how it's you wouldn't think it's an issue in Colombia. It actually is slightly less of a huge issue in Missouri. It's still an issue, right? It's still something that affects us.
A little bit less
us.
That huge.
Yeah, less of a huge issue. It is not. There are definitely places where this conversation is much more relevant on a daily basis in Arizona, California, Texas. You know. But that said, this is still a growing part of the population where. In many other ways, the population's also shrinking.
Yeah, I mean, Not only is it growing, but it's actually growing a little bit faster in Missouri if you compare it to the rest of the U.S., even though our percentage of immigrants as a part of population can't really compare to the nation as a whole. It's still growing about 3 or 4% faster than the percentage of immigrants as a U.S. population as a whole.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's kind of like, I don't know what it is. Maybe we're catching up, or maybe it's just that this is becoming a more desirable place for immigrants to move to. There's been some talk about that. But it's becoming more of an important problem or important issue, I should say, for Missouri. And it's something that we're going to have to start thinking about if we're not thinking about it already.
Right, right.
So, no, what was interesting about that study that came out this year about immigration in Missouri and Kansas was they said that the kinds of work that immigrants have in these states are kind of on either end of the spectrum, right? They're on the cheap manual labor end of the spectrum, and that's where we see a lot of the agricultural work, a lot of the service labor in the hospitality industry. But they're also kind of concentrated very heavily in the high tech and higher wage earning jobs as well.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a mix of that, and very much so in Colombia, right? Because it is somewhat unique.
Yeah, in Colombia versus like much of the rest of the state, we do have more of an information based economy. You know, the vast majority of everybody here is employed by either the university or the city government, meaning the vast majority of people here are engaged in white-collar, information-based work.
Yeah, and there's not much real manufacturing work like that where you might see some of this.
Been declining year over year.
Absolutely. And just in Colombia, I mean, think about the think about the EEZ stuff that was a huge deal here in Columbia, which maybe we'll talk about that on this show at some point if we have 3 hours
like
to do the show. But but that whole the whole point with that was they want Reddy and city leaders wanted to bring in more manufacturing jobs because that's something that doesn't really exist on a large scale aside from like a textbook factory here in town where there's not a huge amount of that manufacturing work here in the direct Columbia area. A lot of that's in these rural areas, if at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything else to say about?
Not really. Do you want to start talking about the bill now?
No. There's one other thing.
What was that?
You mentioned this briefly, but we should talk a little bit more about it. About how one weird thing about Missouri is that we're actually losing some of our non-immigrant population.
Yes. And Domingo, who I mentioned earlier, brought that up. That if it weren't for immigration, our population may be shrinking, and that's actually kind of a trend that we're seeing nationwide.
Yeah, I think
as well.
That's actually something that this study from the university said, that immigration is responsible for virtually all of the population growth we've seen in the last few years.
Right, and there was a dip in at least talking about undocumented immigrants, but there was a dip in immigration around the recession as well, especially in undocumented areas, at least what can be tracked, because there weren't as many jobs. But despite that, as you're saying, it's still making up for that loss in population in Missouri. So that is really it's very interesting, but it's also, again, very important, right, going forward. And I guess, you mentioned the eight people, the senators, the gang of eight, as they call it. John McCain, it was one of the Republican members of that. And he even said, one of his rationales, he was quoted as saying for trying to work on this was that, Republicans need to think about the Latino vote, need to think about the Hispanic vote, because that's a growing population everywhere, not just undocumented, but here people here on visas, people or yeah. people that are have attained citizenship.
Okay, so we're on this totally.
I think we're on. I think okay. we're going. I'm like, let's just go. And that's
okay, we're just going. We're just going. I do want to step back a little
All
bit.
Right.
Okay,
All
so
right. bring me back.
So kind of bring you back a little bit. We're going to get into the policy now. That was what okay. immigration in Missouri looks like. And now we're going to talk about the policy reason. And that's really the reason why we're talking about immigration now, that this year, one of the main policy topics that's going to define the year is likely to be immigration reform. For the first time in, I don't know, maybe ever, there is a bipartisan effort to get this going. The reason for that, most likely, as John McCain mentioned, is that immigration reform has always been an issue for the Democrats and has recently become an issue for the Republicans, who found that they lost heavily in Latino-dominated districts in the last election.
Mm-hmm. And of course, then there's also – when you're talking about voting, there's also this concern amongst Republicans that if you do bring in a lot more – if you do allow a path to citizenship, all of a sudden – if you think that those voters are going to be Democratic, you're going to be in trouble as Republicans, right? So that's another interesting
chicken and
concern.
Egg thing.
It is. But, the funny thing about this immigration proposal, if you haven't looked at it, good luck. But it's
a big one.
Well, I like that McClatchy newspapers had an editorial about it, and their headline said, "Something for everybody to hate." Basically, it's compromise in the true sense of the word, in that everybody is going to have to – the Republicans and Democrats alike are going to have to swallow some stuff they really don't want to be in the bill. But I think that's I think the rationale is that there's no way anything's going to happen,
yeah.
whether or not unless you make these sort of
No, it's funny that so many people hate it. I feel like us as journalists, we approach this with like a lot of excitement, mm-hmm. Because it's just like something is happening,
Yeah, well, I think like the idea of a compromise is really interesting, because that's not something that in Missouri you're not seeing that happen. It's especially at the federal level, you're not seeing compromise. You're seeing there's been plenty of studies saying how this U.S. Congress the last 5 years has been completely ineffective compared
right.
to
historical. Well, immigration has also been kind yeah. of one of those real kind of cultural touchstone issues for the parties, right? Like
yeah.
like abortion rights or like gay marriage or something like that, where it's you kind of plant your foot in the ground and that's where you stand.
Absolutely, yeah. And basically, that's this proposal, which will change, as we should mention before we dive into it. Keep in mind that
this is the first draft that we're talking about, and it's going to be spending the rest of the year getting getting hacked up into pieces.
But it, yeah, but it does already have some big concessions to each side, and it also highlights what you can imply are the things that each party thinks are very important and want to have.
So let's talk about what this immigration reform is. What is it changing, Ryan Familiner?
So one thing is the big headline thing is the path to citizenship, right?
Right.
So it is even if you're an undocumented immigrant that's been arrived in the United States before the beginning of 2012 and you haven't committed a felony, you have a job, you do have to pay a small $500 fine, relatively small for what you'd be getting, which is a chance to be a U.S. citizen. And you have to pay back taxes as well. But basically, it's a 13-year process, right? And you have to pay some fines along the way.
Yeah, they mean path. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's path.
It sounds like it's a metaphor, but no, it's really like you were working on this thing for years of your life.
Right, yeah. 13 years, like that's, from high school to a doctorate degree, right? That's a huge span of somebody – or longer than that. That's a huge span of somebody's lifetime, right? But that's how long this path is for an undocumented immigrant. But there are some other concessions as well, or not concessions, but some other ways to expedite it depending on your situation. So some of the other highlights I'll just throw out there are for Dreamers, if you've heard of that, that's somebody who was under 16 years old and
was brought here
usually by your parents or some other family member. And there would only be a 5-year path to citizenship for a Dreamer. We mentioned earlier those STEM fields. Those are something that it seems like is going to be targeted. So those high-end jobs,
it's science, technology.
Yeah.
Engineering.
Yeah. Thank you. So that's another one expedited for 5 years where somebody can get that citizenship.
Right. There's a lot of provisions in this bill that kind of put value on certain kinds of immigrants. And that's something that has always been a part of the immigration system, but it was never really been emphasized very much. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of visas were given out in a lottery type system, kind of irrespective of what kind of person you were and what you had to offer country.
Who knows how that got put in the first place? That just doesn't seem to make any sense.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be taken out in according to this draft of the bill. There's going to be no more lottery system. But yeah, so if you are the kind of person that works in a high-end tech field, there's going to be a lot more opportunities to get a special visa for those kind of people. And what is that visa called, Ryan? I forget.
That is the... Why would you do that to me?
It's the H-1B.
H-1B.
I got it.
H-1B visa. And it would also – a lot of these, it's also – like that is bumping up the number of H-1B visas as well, which that's something that a lot of – actually a decent amount of people here in Columbia are here under, whether they're students or –
Right. No, a lot of people work at the hospital, a lot of people that work for the university are under those
visas. And so that's expediting that process. And, you know, it's funny because this is one of the things that many people when talking about immigration worry about. The whole brain drain aspect, which is, you know, where you're taking the best and brightest from one country and bringing them into another. That's what happened, you know, early in America as well. You know, people that wanted opportunities and weren't getting them where they were came to America. And so some people are worried about, we're just going to take these best and brightest from other countries. But that's what this proposal is definitely encouraging is, yes, we're going to take the best and brightest in these countries, allow them to be here. Ultimately, that's good for America. But is that good for those other countries that are leaving?
But to bring it back to reality too, we're really upping it from, it looks like, from 65,000 a year to 180,000 a year, which is a huge year-over-year increase. But it's not exactly like we're going to drain all the scientists of Europe.
This is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's something that's targeted, like I said, and those numbers, they'll change, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff here is going to change, right?
Yeah. I know. It's kind of funny because just upping that number, upping that H-1B visa number is a relatively popular part of this bill. And you think that maybe that could have happened before. You think maybe it could have passed one little bit. But it's just such a difficult subject to dive into in a legislative way.
Right.
It's probably hasn't happened.
Right. Well, and again, as you said, anything that has the word immigration on it is going to be controversial by its nature. It's going to be picked apart. But that's one of those. OK, so there's a lot of stuff on both sides that people are not happy about. Like you said, that's one of them that I think a lot of people can agree on that seems to make sense for the country.
And I do want to say that that's something that I think we might feel here in Colombia, too. Right. Because we experience a weird kind of brain drain, too. Right. Where we bring in a lot of foreign students. There's every year there's more and more foreign students that are educated here. The University of Missouri. And then and when they're finished with their educations, most of them leave and, mm-hmm. and go back to their countries or somewhere else where they get a job. But this, I don't know if it'll work out this way, but this, with more H-1B visas around, there might be more of a possibility for some of those students to stay here in this community and work and contribute to this economy.
Well, you would hope so if the margins, if the law of averages work out, right?
Yeah.
That you bring in more people and more, and there's an easier path for them to stay if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah, that seems like that's a realistic possibility, and it's something that we already see happening in a system that's not as simple as it might be if this were to pass as it is now anyway.
Yeah.
But
So what else is in here?
So the W visa program for low skilled guest workers,
mm-hmm.
That cap would rise significantly as well. Right now it's 20,000. It would go up to 75,000.
Right. So the low-skilled guest worker visa, that's a visa. It's basically a work visa for manual labor type jobs. That how long does it last? It's
I think it's 3 years.
Yeah, it's a 3-year visa,
and you can have them forever. They're renewable. And you could bring your family as well.
Right.
But there's still some – it's not really clear yet. There is a measure that says this can't be used as part of the path to permanent citizenship. But then there's also maybe a loophole that might still – again, it'll all change. But
yeah. Well, I think the hope is that the kind of person that gets a W visa and the kind of person that is on a path to citizenship are different kind of people.
Right. I think so too. Yeah. And
because the W visa people, you know, these are the people that might work in seasonal labor. They might return back to their country of origin on the off season.
Right.
With
on
families.
A yearly basis. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that is a peer. And these are commonly used in agriculture fields as well.
Yeah.
So,
now, this is an important thing too. There's been a lot of there's been a lot of talk about some kind of guest worker program, partially because it in some ways this kind of normalizes the immigration pattern that we've seen over the years. That, you know, it used to be that there were a lot of kind of transient workers that they weren't like immigrants per se, but they were kind of temporarily working in border states and then returned back home during the off seasons. But that doesn't happen as much as it used to because border security is so much harsher than it used to be.
Right. If you're going to make the trip over, you're not going to risk doing that again next year. You're just going to stay. It's
so
much
some
less
people
troubling.
Say,
yeah.
Yeah. Some people say we've actually upped the amount of undocumented workers we have by forcing otherwise transient workers to stay.
Yeah. And we skipped a pretty important step, and that is border security is a big part of this proposal. And as it's written now, none of this would start until border security measures went into place. Those are one of the triggers for this as it's written.
Right. They're tied together. It's like first you secure the borders and then these programs go into place.
Right. And so there's, you know, billions of dollars, $3 billion, another optional $1.5 billion. For border security, and that's one of those things that, again, if it's everything that wants to hate, something for everyone to hate, Democrats are going to hate the idea of drones flying over the borders, but that's what we're talking about, all kinds of new security to try to really close down the borders. But then again, that path to citizenship is something Republicans wouldn't pass on its own either. But then you've got these nice things in the middle that everybody can kind of agree on, or at least a lot of people can kind of agree on. But then you have the tough to swallow things that are trying that the Gang of Eight's trying to include here that, again, would not pass on their own.
Right. And I think that's also the reason for these weird fees. You know, this bill is kind of riddled with lots of weird little $500 fees here and there, mm-hmm. little paperwork charges. I think those are supposed to be partially paying for these huge increases in border security.
Right. Which, again, $500 is not going to offset much of that. And it's also like, is that really – like, is it necessary to show a shine of commitment? You're already showing a 13-year commitment. Do you need $500?
Exactly.
But
– 13 years and $500.
Yeah. The other thing that we didn't talk about either is the employer enforcement stuff as well, E-Verify, which is already around and depending on the state is already very important.
Yeah. You could talk about the E-Verify program.
So E-Verify, it's basically this electronic system that allows employers to identify by punching in some key details about their applicant, whether or not they're legal, if they basically it's something. OK, so it's something that employers use currently to make sure they're not in trouble. But this would actually require employers to use
it. Right now, employers are using it mostly voluntarily.
Right. Again, some states have actually even required it or put other measures in that make more punishment for a larger punishment that make offer more incentives for you to use it. But this would actually mandate that employers use this improved version of E-Verify. showing non-citizens have to show these work authorization cards. There's biometric data embedded into these documents. So they're, you know, it's not as easy to forge stuff, at least that's the idea, as it is now. So, but yeah, so right. That's another one of these steps, one of these triggers that, you know, is something that is put in there to make one side feel good, might not make the other side feel good, but then you've got, you know, concessions on the other side. So.
Yeah, and the idea, I believe, is that almost all employers will have to use E-Verify at some point.
Yeah, it would start with bigger companies,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it starts with – you need to be like a 5,000-employee company, and if you're that big, then you're going to have to do it almost immediately within a year or two of this.
Right. Yeah, almost – once you get to like 4 or 5 years out, the idea is that every employer in the country is going to be using this.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is we'll see how the infrastructure goes on that. You know, I mean, obviously that would really boost this program. You need to have a lot more – security levels and stuff like that. So it may be a little ambitious for that.
You're going to have to hire a lot of IT guys.
Yeah,
where are you going to get those IT people?
Talk about job creation. yeah, there you go. It's all secular here. But yeah, that's another aspect of it, but doesn't necessarily affect Missouri any more than it affects anywhere else, but still very interesting as one step in this. But yeah, we've talked about it already, but the student visas, the H1B visas, I keep wanting to call them HB1. I don't know why. Those are a big deal here. Could really change the way we see things here. And again, there's also, we talked about the W visas. There's also some, like you mentioned, there could be a new guest worker program for agricultural work, which would be very interesting to a lot of our rural areas that do use that kind of work.
Yeah, we're certain to see some kind of impact on that.
Yeah,
in this state.
Yeah. So, so yeah, it's interesting. But then, you know, the other thing that you ultimately get to after this is then, okay, so what we talked a lot about on Intersection is what do you do when the people are here all of a sudden? If this thing really happens in the next 5 or 10 years, like how easy is it for that group of people to really integrate
right.
and
yeah,
become
there's,
a part of the community?
The metaphor a lot of people use is bringing them out of the shadows.
Right, right.
And I remember one guest on the program yesterday said that she didn't really like that.
Yeah, yeah. We had an agricultural attorney on the show, and she – or not agriculture, an immigration attorney on the show. And, she said she really didn't like that because the people are already here, right?
Right.
They're not really in the shadows. They're already part of these communities.
Right. They're going to school. They're paying taxes. And the shadows kind of makes it sound like they are
– shifty.
Yeah. They're shifty. They're up to no good.
Right. Know? Right. No, yeah. They're already here, right? The coming out of the shadows is a line that's getting thrown around politically. And,
right. But the other side of that is that they are coming into the light as far as documentation goes and as far as like society's ability to our society's ability to actually count them and account for them. And then in some ways we're going to have to be responsible for them too. So that's going to be a wake up call.
Yeah. And one of the guests we had was Eduardo Crespi. He runs the Center Latino, which he founded in 2000, basically to address some of these human needs, right? And that's kind of what it kind of boiled down to is that, you know, this bill would, if passed, would solve a lot of paperwork problems, but there's still a lot of real-world human problems that exist, you know, mm-hmm. and really require some significant change in the community level, or at least, you know, it really is up to the community one by one to determine how this would go once this happened. But it would be Scott. Did you forget to hit record?
No. We're recording. The computer just fell asleep.
Oh, we.
I had to.
Yeah.
I almost broke the podcast. You guys, I'm sorry.
Hopefully, listeners don't follow the cue and fall.
No,
asleep.
No. Okay, no. Back to the experience of immigration.
Yeah, the experience of immigration. So there was some really interesting research talking about how acculturation is the word they used and how people that are immigrating fit into the communities they show up in. And so there are four options they give us, right? Assimilation, which is you become an American that listens to Britney Spears and whatever else, okay? Integration, which is and I'm being very general here, but integration is kind of like you keep your culture, but the community accepts you and your culture. Marginalization, which is obviously not a good thing for that immigrant, or separation, which is just creating your own separate little, you know, little land in this area, your own separate community.
Yeah, your own institutions, and, your own support systems.
Yeah, and that's really currently what's happening. And this research was actually based on three different cities or towns. I shouldn't say cities, towns in Missouri. It wasn't really clear. They didn't tell us exactly where it was, I think for confidentiality reasons, but basically it was kind of in the St. Joe area, in the Sedalia area, and almost a little further north of Joplin. These three communities they looked at, and separation is what was would happen, which when I was talking with Domingo, it's like, you know what, that anecdotally, if you lived in a community where there is a significant Hispanic population, and that's what this research was specifically addressing, is Hispanic communities. That's what happens, right? There, I mean, I don't know about you, Scott, but that's in the communities I've lived in, that's where the Latino population lives in this area of town. They have restaurants there. They have barbershops. They have, there's all the houses are all there. It's basically that's the community there. They're tight knit. They're usually a lot of times they're around a church. It's a very tight knit community. They look out for each other. A lot of times it's family and friends. Actually, that's what the research found. A lot of times it's mainly family and friends. You're not finding many contacts aside from family and friends.
Yeah, no. And then you go downtown and you don't see them.
No, because they've got their own downtown.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, they live in another town almost.
Right. And that really was 70-80%, 75% of what they found in these three communities was this separation, some integration. Fortunately, not much marginalization, but unfortunately, not much assimilation. And that's the one where – or I shouldn't say that, because integration is really what you probably want, right? You don't want to necessarily rid these people of their culture, right?
That's not what we're looking for. Assimilation happens.
Assimilation happens,
but it's not,
over time, I suppose. But that's not necessarily the goal. So I shouldn't say that. Integration was only about 21%. That's probably – short term, what you would like to see, I think.
Right.
I
mean, integration is something that you might have some control over too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so too.
Do you think, Ryan, that this immigration reform addresses separation?
I don't know that that's its intent.
I don't think it's its intent either. But do you think it could?
I think it's probably the next step, right? I mean, I think it would. There has been some discussion about that, like what happens – again, what we've already been talking about here, what happens? What is there actual funding for some of these people that come in with these types of needs? And we didn't really talk about it, but some of these provisions at the moment talk about healthcare and what people are able to get and not able to get while they're here under these different visas. And that's another interesting discussion, is what kind of services are actually available and what big gaping holes are going to be for people that are here under these different tracks, I guess.
Yeah.
And so that, at the most basic human need, that's something you're talking about. But then there's also these other just acculturation things that you need to consider. And it doesn't seem like that's really addressed at the moment. And I don't know that it will be. Maybe somebody will think to slip it in. I haven't seen much for that. If there is, and I don't know how you would, it's hard to find. You can't create an Eduardo Crespi in every community.
No,
there's one
no,
in Colombia, and he just kind of rose up and saw a need.
Yeah.
There's definitely communities that don't have somebody like him at the moment. But you almost need somebody like that who's going to come in and say, I want to try to help people who have, because right now he has got plenty of people who have all these types that are falling into these huge gaps. They're not like, sometimes we say slipping through the cracks. It's not the cracks. They're huge gaps and they've been left there.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there are a lot of provisions in here. Again, it's a paperwork problem, but there are all these human need problems that are going to be interesting, or issues that are going to be interesting if this does happen.
Yeah.
And it may be up to states, communities to figure that out. It might not be something that can be figured out at the federal level.
Yeah, and it's funny. We call it immigration reform, which kind of sounds like immigration fixing, but it's not that.
Yeah,
no, it's an ongoing thing that society is going to have to deal with.
Absolutely, yeah. It's changing the semantics of things, but it's still – and, everybody brings this up in the end, but immigration is not a new issue to America. That's something that – it's the history of America, right? So but it's just the way that America has dealt with it over the years has changed substantially, and it looks like it's probably going to change again. Now there's a chance this doesn't pass. It's the Gang of Eight. It's a bunch of powerful U.S. senators that have some pull and have come up with something that seems like it might actually work politically with some concessions. But who knows? We talked way too long, haven't we?
It's a little bit long. Yeah, it's a little long. Nobody's here anymore.
If you're here, send us a comment. We'll send you a sun drop or something.
Send you a sun drop.
That's what Scott's been drinking.
I've been drinking a sun drop. I think you might have heard me belch a couple times. I was thinking I was going to have to cut that out, but I don't know if I can because you're talking.
We'll figure it out.
That's terrible. Okay, it's okay. It's okay. Nobody's here anymore. Okay, let's end the show. Okay?
All right, good.
All right. So that's going to do it for Como Explained. I'm going to remind all of you listeners, all of the zero of you that are listening right now at this point, that this is our third episode, and that our last two episodes, I think they're still very timely, still very informative, and all kinds of podcasty fun. Our last episode, it's about C2 zoning, and that's an issue that's certain to stay very relevant and very important in Colombia and local politics over the coming year. So give that a listen. If you hear C2, read about C2, and you have no idea what it is, we'll help you out. Find us on the iTunes store. We're also on SoundCloud and something called player.fm. They were nice enough to add us, but we're there. Send us a comment. Yeah, player.fm. Send us a comment. Tweet at us at KBIA. Send an email to news@kbia.org. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I'm Ryan from Uliner.
See you next time.